It's 10 o'clock Mountain Time. It's January 7th, and that means it's time for Tom and Shane, No Business and Politics. And Tom Eagleoff, your morning mayor at AM 1450 KMMS in Bozeman, 1340 KPRK in Livingston, and find computers everywhere, of course. My co-host, Shane Matobin, half man, half amazing, still in Cantaloupes, looks like, Cantaloupes, Canada, making this absolutely a international show, right?
Yeah. Well, we tried to. Yes, yes, indeed. And the markets are trying to be international, too. The U.S. dollar is still weakening. But yeah, the Dow's up an amazing 240 after the final approval of your president.
31,000.
70. So they broke the 31,000 mark. And Standard & Poor's is 3,803, up 55.5. And NASDAQ 100, 298 at 12,921. Yeah. So, yeah, everything seems to be moving on note now. The global markets are all.
We'll do a market at the end.
Yes, I understand. I'm just acknowledging what happened at 4 a.m. this morning and letting people know that we're paying attention to all of it.
Okay.
Will we proceed with your plans today?
Yeah, we'll have a lot to talk about politically on Saturday. But in the meantime, if you're watching us on YouTube, it's very important that you subscribe and ring the little notification bell. That way you'll be notified anytime Tom and Shane are on. So we'll be happy to do that for you. And we really appreciate you tuning in to chat with us this morning. And of course, we're here every Tuesday and Thursday for a business. We'll take a business topic and help you and your small business or home-based business succeed. Our political shows, of course, are on Saturday, 8 to 11 Mountain Time. You can listen to those anywhere in the world at KMMSAM.com. You don't have to join anything, leave any information, no emails, no credit cards, nothing like that. You just go over there and click Listen Live, and you are on with us. You can call us, you can text us, whatever. If you missed any of our past shows, of course, they're at KMMSAM.com. Just click on Tom and Shane's podcast, and please share that with your friends. We would greatly appreciate that. So by all means, we need that a lot. So, well, Shane, today we're going to talk about incorporation and business structure. So very important for your business, because there are tax implications, there are legal implications. You don't want to be sued, probably. At least I would guess you don't want to be sued. So, but if you are, incorporation will give you some relief, I should say. So if you're the big question of the day, I guess, is should you incorporate your small business? And if you do, what type of incorporation do you have? What do they have in Canada? You have something, I mean, you have corporations, obviously, but are they structured like the American corporations are?
Yes, they are. Globally, they are principally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Start the same way. What you have is a predication of law and precedent, which is principally held in your country in Delaware. It's not restricted in Canada. Each province deals with corporate issues of law. But in federal and international cases, it's Delaware in your country. And then, of course, state states deal with state registry. State registries of companies, whether you have the basic two in state, territory, or commonwealth countries, or sole proprietorship, or a trust. And so we'll be talking about the different types of sole proprietorship, and partnerships and general partnerships and so forth, limited and liability companies and so forth. But it's basically English common law over the last 400 years has established sole proprietorship and trust as the principle of corporate incorporation. And then you go to the more general examples that do exist in some countries and others, as you said, for tax reasons principally, and liability. Liability is the biggest one. There are specific areas of structure that you can get into that we should talk about, because liability can be established directly to you or separate you by what is referred to as a Chinese wall. A Chinese wall means between you and somebody else, a third party, there's a company that they, to prevent them to get to you. And that limits your liability.
So we'll go into all of that with the various structures that we have. We want to start with sole proprietorship, and this is one where you don't have to do much of anything to be a sole proprietor. You just have to open your doors and start doing business. The biggest issue with sole proprietorship is that you hang everything out there to be taken if you're sued. That's the big issue with the sole proprietorship. There's no separation between the business and your personal assets, your home, your savings. Everything would be up for grabs if you were sued and your business structure is a sole proprietorship.
That's right.
So that's
the proprietorship falls under the corporate definition. There are principally three corporate definitions: the corporation itself, professional corporation, and DBAs, or doing business as. Mm-hmm. So sole proprietorship is basically doing business as a person or entity that is different from the person that's actually running it. So because you may decide to have a company, you'll have a name and marketing program, which we talked about on Tuesday, but you know, as Tom says, you have a lot more exposure and you have a lot more liability. So most lawyers and accountants will look at the size or the, you know, where you're at right now with your business or where you tend to go with it. In a matter of speaking, if you're a third party to a business, say it's a cosmetic company, and your sales rep for it, you know, most generally set it up as a sole proprietorship initially, because there's no paperwork or filing, and do business as that company with you as a salesperson for it. But if that starts evolving into greater income, you would then under that set up a company and then get an agreement with that company to be doing it through a limited liability company, or through a partnership, or through a corporation, as we said.
Yeah, I would not advise you to be a sole proprietorship for very long, because it's just too dangerous. If you create a product and it injures someone, or you know, you have a landscaping business and you trash. You know, something runs into the garage or breaks a window in the home or something like that. They can come after your home, you know, your savings, everything you have is up for grabs. So,
yeah, it's very important you consult a lawyer in terms of things of that issue, liability, and also an accountant with not just the liability, but the benefits you may be losing by not being some form of corporate structure, because that's where all the bonuses are.
Yeah, that's true. We'll talk about those as we go along. The other thing important is that you may not be able to get a business bank account if you're a sole proprietor. They may not see you as a total business because you got no business license. You've got no, you've got no business name, whatever. You're just operating your business. So
in Canada, the provincial law does provide for you to set up a DBA, doing business as, with the name of the company and as you signing with regards to that, because very often when you find yourself enrolled as a salesperson or sales rep, you will have an agreement with that company. And in Canada, you can take that agreement to the bank to show them that you're doing business as a sales rep of this company. So, you know, I don't know what that is in your state, but here you can set up a bank account.
Mm-hmm. Well, as a sole proprietor, you're still able to get a trade name, not a trademark. Don't confuse that, a trade name. It can also be hard to raise money because you can't sell stock and banks are hesitant to lend two sole proprietorships too. So
benefits they can, but from incorporating specifically, yes.
Yeah, they can be a good choice for low risk businesses and owners who want to test test their business before forming a formal formal business, I should say. Easy for me to say.
And the other side of the coin too is in particularly in Canada, and I know in the United States, once you make the step, there's another aspect to this, and that is whether you do it by state and or province in Canada or federally in both countries. I mean, if you set up a federal corporation, which we will, again, the laws apply differently to the same types, like a general partnership or an, a limited partnership. You can form that in your state or in your province, but in forming it federally in your country is a lot different. So these things become more expensive, more provocative, but and also more beneficial as you move through the process of growth. But it's a matter of growth and ongoing success that makes these real decisions.
Yeah. Well, next we want to talk about a partnership. We talked about this a little bit on Tuesday, but the big thing we want to emphasize with a partnership is you don't want to have a 50-50 partnership, in my opinion. That's just my opinion. You can have whatever you want.
Well, but let's define it for everyone. First, partnerships fall into four groups. You have the general partnership, you have the limited partnership, the limited liability partnership, and the limited liability limited partnership. And as Tom was saying, that you don't necessarily want to have anything in, you want to be particularly in control any partnership that you have. So please continue.
Yeah. Well, the reason being is that somebody has to make the final decision on things. You've got to designate someone in that partnership who's going to be the leader of that partnership. And, you know, if you object to their situation, you've given them the power to override you and go ahead with that decision. And otherwise, if you're arguing back and forth, that arguing is just going to escalate further and further and further. And eventually, you know, it's going to harm the business. So it's best to have, usually what happens is the partnership with the most power is the one who brings the most money to the partnership. So they have the biggest investment in the partnership.
So a general partnership is important for you to understand because it's the weakest of the types of partnerships that exist. A partnership is in is which partners are jointly and separately liable for the debts of the partnership. Now, when it's when the law says in your country and mine, jointly and separately, it depends entirely on how you take on debt or you make determinations of expenditures under your business plan that we talked about. And but the important thing is that in most U.S. states, it can be created. A general partnership can be created without requiring a public filing. The partners may themselves be legal entities or individuals in this case for the general partnership. So a general partnership is probably the weakest of all the types of partnerships that that exist out there as a component to make a decision. Again, your lawyer and accountants would, you know, lawyer and accountant would probably give you the advice. And very often is, again, determined on the success and the growth of the success of your company and how you're proceeding with your corporate vision and so forth. And especially with regards to your, you know, your financial statement that you'd set out. And if you're meeting your goals that you'd originally set out in that financial statement month to month. So then we talk about the limited partnership. So there is, in this case, where one partner is the general partner, and that is what Tom is referencing. And that makes that individual the basic kingmaker of decisions, and you know, no decision is indecision, and to solve problems you have to make decisions. So now the limited partnership has an interesting aspect to it in that in when you set this up, you set up guidelines of the partnership, and under those guidelines you make a determination of the liability that is shared or not. So limited partners generally do not participate in management of the entity or the business. So meaning you may have partners in the business that work for the company itself, but they're not managing or operating it. That's the importance of a limited partnership. Is one person is basically the general manager, because mm-hmm. it's big enough to have a board. It's not big enough to have different established officers in the company.
Yeah. Well, the other thing too, taxes we need to talk about. In the sole proprietorship that we talked about earlier, the taxes just flow through to your regular tax return. You do a Schedule C on that, and all of your business expenses and income go in there. So you don't file a separate return. Same with the partners. Well, the partnership, you probably would file a separate return. I'm not sure on that one, but it does flow through. The taxes do flow through to your regular tax return, as does a limited liability corporation. That also does the same thing. Now, another really important thing, because the limited liability corporation creates a corporate veil between you, your personal assets, and the company. So if the company is sued for anything other than doing something illegal, your personal assets are protected from, they can only sue the company. They can't sue you individually unless you do something illegal. Bernie Madoff, for example, would be an example, or Enron, the guys that went to prison for that. So the corporate veil doesn't protect criminal activity, but it will protect you if you're sued or go bankrupt or whatever. People can only come after the assets of the company, not your personal assets, not your home, not your car, not your savings. So that's the big reason for incorporation. And the limited liability is real easy. It's usually one page. I think in Montana, it's $75 to become a limited liability company. And, that will protect you. Now, the other really, really...
Make an observation about the limited liability partnership that's really important, and the premise for it. The reason for the different partnerships is because they're basically the initial structure of building or setting up a company for you as an individual or with partners. But the limited liability partnership can expand to very large size. We'll get into that, because then that would become a limited liability company. But limited liability partnerships came about for another very specific reason, and that is it limits each individual partner. So the great thing about a partnership is you establish the shares of the profits from the company. So while you're running the costs and expenses through the company, at the end of the day, you're expecting to have a profit. So limited liability partnerships are shared profits, and they're established in the guidelines that you set out. Now, the liability side of it is also set out. So if at the end of the day, year, quarter, depending on how the guidelines are set out in your partnership agreement, if there's a loss to the partnership, then it's shared equally as well. So this is why the limited liability partnership is so important, because you want to make sure you share your liabilities if you're going to share the assets. You don't want to be in a position where you've got partners and, they take their two partners, they take their third, but when there becomes a liability, they don't put their third up. So that's really the big importance, or the relative importance, of a limited liability partnership. You both share in the benefits or profits and the liabilities you have to cover.
Yeah. And the other very, very important thing about any corporation you form, if I don't know you're a corporation, all bets are off. You're not protected by the corporate veil if your customers do not know you're a corporation. So LLC or company or Inc. goes on business cards. It goes on invoices. It goes on your vehicle. It goes everywhere. It goes on your building. There can be that you're a corporation. There'd be no confusion that you're a corporation.
That's right. And, you know, for the first time in your life, you may find yourself being able to compete with academia.
Yeah.
Because, the Eagle Man has pointed out, you know, those academics, they love to put all their markings on their cards, right, and hang them behind their wall. You know, all the diplomas, or if they've gotten a doctorate in philosophy or a doctor in literature, or written a paper in history or some science. Or a medical doctor. So by having your name in the name of your company and what type of partnership it is, like an LLP or an LLP or an LP or just a general partnership, you know, it's an important fact. And as it establishes to whoever you've handed that card to, because your first communication with someone's very important in this particular case. Business cards aren't just, you know, important for you to network and for you to market. They're also there to protect you as an individual with regards to the type of company that you work under. So it's important that you have business cards, and it's important that you make every effort to hand cards out to people that you meet. Always give them two. Tell them to put one in their wallet and one in their office. So, you know, the reason I say that is because then if any time you have a problem, people will say, you know, a lawyer, you know, coming after you might say, well, how do you know you gave him a card? Well, I give everyone actually two cards. So that, you know, that's a really great comeback if you're ever unfortunately in that position. So you know, it's consistent with always telling the truth. If you always give someone the card, you know, then you know that that's just been the experience with everyone you've ever dealt with.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree. And depending on your business, everyone within walking distance of your home should have your business card. And also, it goes in every bill I pay. I realize a lot of people pay online now, but, you know,
every bar you go into, you know, you just calmly just drop one at the counter.
Leave a card on the table. Yeah.
Well, or yeah, on the bar, or even stores. Yeah. You know, if you go into a store, even you know, whatever, a little corner shop that you go in to buy something, you know, that you need, drop a card on the counter, and get them out there. You're not littering your networking. This is a whole thing about marketing that's very important to learn.
Yeah, I do reverse shoplifting when I travel. If I go into a bookstore and my book's not there, I leave one.
There you go.
They can go, well, boy, we don't have this, but price is on here and I've got a barcode. So boom, we'll sell you the book.
And that's a good idea. If you go in and you see the most popular books at the front of the store, you know, open a couple of them and throw a card in and people
do that.
And then as they read the book, all of a sudden they'll find your business card and go, oh.
Yeah, there you are.
Wow, this is sort of cool. And
yeah, why not, man?
Believe me, people will look at it just because all of a sudden they found your business card in there, and then it's a bookmarker. Wow, well, that's even better.
Yeah. Well, the limit of liability is probably the cheapest and most protective way, unless you're going to have stockholders or things like that. But if you're going to run a landscaping business, a barbershop, you know, whatever, the LLC is probably the way you want to go. Now, the other important thing we need to talk about is just because you've declared yourself one type of partnership doesn't mean that you can't change. You can change at any time.
Absolutely.
You can get a lawyer to assist you with that. And closing out one company and starting another one, or moving the company from one corporation to another, there are rules about where the money goes and who gets what and all of that. So, you're not locked into one.
Right. And as we mentioned before, the limited liability company is one of the more popular companies in corporately around the world. Mm-hmm. But it's important to mention that it doesn't say limited profitable companies. It says limited liability companies.
Right. Yeah.
Now, again, we'll redefine that because liability in a limited liability company, an LLC, is shared, as are the profits. Now, there are principally three: the limited liability company itself, the professional limited liability company, and then, of course, there's just the LLC. But then they're broken down into other areas of expertise, or may be defined. Again, that would be between you and your lawyer and you and your accountant. In other words, if you're wanting to set up a law firm or a dental office, like a professional in a professional business, because one of the problems that you want to protect, one of the problems you have in wanting to protect yourself from liability is your profession. You know, if you have issues that result in failure of your LLC because of a case as a lawyer or something that happened untoward with regards to a dental issue that you had, maybe a product you used or something, or a shared liability that you, because of a product you use, you don't want it to affect your licensing as a professional. All professionals are all licensed by the state or the federal government, where individuals that are in business aren't necessarily licensed. So again, one of these great aspects of limited liability is to limit the liability of your professional license. So again, that's important.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Yeah. Yeah. The biggest thing is you want to separate your personal assets from the company. And that's what the LLC principally does. So that if you are sued or go bankrupt, whoever you owe money to can only come after the business assets, not your personal assets. They can't come after your home, can't come after your savings. Can't come on, stocks and bonds, investments, whatever you have. Now, if you're a sole proprietor, they can come after all of those things. They can come after everything you have. So you may want to think about a limited liability partnership or limited liability company to start with, because it's very inexpensive. As I said, it's about $75 here in Montana. It's a one-page form, and you register your business name, as many companies require a, when I was in California, you have to apply for what is called a fictitious business name. Even though it's a real business, they call it a fictitious business name. And you had to publish that in a business newspaper that you were starting this business. And if anybody had an objection to it, to your business or to your name use or whatever, they would come forward, and then after the 2 or 3 weeks of publication, then you were legitimately a business. The other thing, business licenses, there's no, as far as I know, there's no county business license in Montana. So if you're in the county, you wouldn't necessarily have to have a business license. You would have your business registered with the state. If you're in the city, there is a, you do need a business license to do business in the city, and some business or some counties, I've had them tell me that, well, you've got to have a business license in our city, even though you live in the county, to do business in the city. Now, you know, I don't know if that's right or not. That would be a question for your attorney, but, you may have to, get multiple business licenses in wherever you do business. So,
That may
or may not happen.
That's why making these decisions as you move through this process is so important.
Right.
And that's why your financial statement and your income statement are so important, because now you may have to readjust it. Mm-hmm. Once you step into the fold of not being a sole proprietor or being on your own or doing business as a sole proprietor, then you have added costs, and those costs are legal and accounting. Now, oddly enough, to this day still, and for the last 2,000 years, the only industries or the only professions that have no limit on what they charge you or what the rate charge is for you for their time, the only ones are lawyers and accountants. Everybody else has some kind of guidelines that have been established by governments as to what they can charge people. Not accountants, not lawyers. So you have to be very careful, and you have to spend some time. You need to talk to other friends that have had experience with lawyers and accountants. Sit down, have a drink with them, have a conversation with them, learn from them. It's always better to talk to the smartest person in the room, or more importantly, learn from someone who's made mistakes that you don't want to. So once you start engaging in the need of lawyers and accountants, it's going to affect your income statement, and it's going to come to your financial statement, which, again, I'm repeating myself, but it's important for you to know. You'll now have to go back and take the time, and thank goodness you have a computer, But then you have to add those additional costs in against your profits for what you intend to pursue. That's why making this choice is big, because it's a big cost to what you're doing. And you have to weigh that in every manner that you can. Because once you move past the limited liability companies, you move toward the corporate companies. And that's a lot more different than the limited liability company.
Yeah. Before we go there, we've got a few comments we need to put up. Jim says LLCs are very easy to do. And I would agree, Jim, one-page form, $75, fill out the info and send it in, and boom, you're incorporated. So, and over the years, he's had full S Corp and now a license. So, yeah, we'll be talking about that. And can cause real problems, 50-50 partnerships. So, we would encourage you to decide on who is going to have the final say. And if you're going to be partners, you know, and bands always have a leader, you know, they've always got somebody that calls the shots, you know, or one or two guys, and the other guys, we'll just play our stuff, just pay us, you know, that's all we care about. So, yeah, we're doing okay there. So, all right, let's talk about the big corporation, Coca-Cola, Procter & Gamble, Exxon. Elon Musk just became the richest guy in the world this morning. So these are companies where they want stockholders. You got to raise money. So this is the best way to do it, is to you know, how much control the stockholders have is based on how much stock you issue.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of designation to that as a private corporation, and we need to distinguish it because there's two forms, a private corporation or a public corporation. Now, there's two principal types of corporations, of course. There's the corporation itself or Inc., incorporated. And then, of course, there's the professional corporation. Professional corporations are set up by people with professions, as we delineated earlier in the PLCs. So people such as attorneys, architects, accountants, and doctors will set up a professional corporation. Now, they're limited to what they can do because they're a professional corporation, but they can expand if they want. Now, a corporation itself becomes its own entity. This has been established by precedent in law, and it's been established by precedent in business globally. So while there are different types of corporations, like in the United States, there are, you know, different, there's 51 corporate chartered jurisdictions in the United States for each state. So again, you can incorporate in a state or you can incorporate federally. There's also suffixes, whatever. There are different types of corporations for tax reasons.
Right.
And I'll let the Eagle Man take over that issue that he'll probably talk about. And they're defined, and the predicate and precedent for that is under a Connecticut law, where most U.S. corporate law is decided and argued.
Okay. Let's see. Let me get back up here. I'm back up here. Let's get both of us up here. What do you say?
Okay. So we're talking, right now, Tom seems to be working to rejoin us. He's got on his,
I didn't go away, which is
basically the acknowledgement that you're a corporation.
Yeah.
And then there's different types. There's the A Corp, and he'll go through the list, to give you better understanding of it. Yeah. The important thing about a corporation and moving to this level is now you're looking at the success that you've set out in your financial statement and your income statement, where you're now moved past hundreds of thousands and millions, and you're literally in the frame of millions in sales and a million in costs of operating, and you want to expand. But you need additional funding for that, because the primary benefit of most corporations is a profit from anywhere as little as a 5% of their gross income or gross sales to as much as 20%. So it, depending on where you're at, the cost of going public for lawyers and accountants primarily will require that you bring in outside investors. A lot of people sometimes are successful in doing this just with friends and family, depending the nature of the friends and family they have and how successful they've been and are able to take money and risk it with you. The other way you can do it with bank financing. If you have had a great relationship with your bank and whatever loans or debt you've taken, even personally or professionally, you've handled well and you have a great credit rating. But most banks now today tend to stay away from investing directly in the first round of funding in corporations. So that's where you look for the angel investor. And these are professional investors that actually have funds. They're broken actually into two. One is an investment banker. An investment banker is primarily an individual that has money to invest. So that's who you'll look for. And they'll have different types of funds that they have set together or put brought together that allow them to take those funds and invest them, you know, at some risk or at great risk. And the great thing about that is that they have the opportunity to make that decision on their own and very often negotiate with you. Now, those negotiations become very important because now they're discussing the issuance of shares and percentage ownership of your company. And it's not just for the short term that you need to discuss this with investment bankers. It's the long term. The other side of that are merchant bankers. Now, a merchant banker you can do a deal with because a merchant banker is someone who has a company like yours who's searching for money to fund it. So you can either reach out to a merchant banker who will find you money, or you can look out, reach out directly to an investment banker who will give you money. But to do both, you have to be incorporated. You have to set up the right to issue stock. You have to have a trust company, excuse me, or a acknowledged a company that registers and transfers your stock. This is not something you can do individually. It has to be segregated. So this, again, is one of these additional costs on your financial statement and your income statement that you have. There are some very well-known and established companies that do this. Very often at the beginning as a company, you may pick a trust company that will do it for you. Again, your lawyers and accountants will direct you in this area and of how to do this. So we'll take a minute here and I'm just going to check and see where we are on the StreamYard. And Tom is right back. So he seems
I'm
to
back.
Be
I didn't leave.
In
I didn't leave. I didn't leave. I didn't
so we'll
leave.
Continue on with this.
I didn't leave.
To have this discussion. When you're starting to put together these corporations that you feel are important for yourself with regards to your future plans, remember you're looking now in anticipation of what your financial and income statements have said. You're looking out 5 years at least. Generally speaking, a private corporation may remain private forever. But if it does decide to go public, it is definitely in the realm of a 2 to 4 year process. Now, the primary reason for this is that those angel investors, those initial investors that have come in, they know that under the guidelines of the Securities and Exchange Commission, which you have to register with to get this process done, not the Treasury Department, but the Securities and Exchange Commission through a Securities and Exchange Commission attorney, separate attorney from your business attorney or corporate attorney, because now you're getting big and there's more law that you have to follow. And your accounting firm may or may not deal with public companies, so you may have to change your accounting firm. Another decision you may have wanted to look at the beginning is, does the accounting firm you have now, are they able to take you to that public stage? Because if you're going to spend 2 or 3 years with a small or regional accounting firm that can't help you go public, then you know you've got to establish a long-term relationship with people, networking for the long term. So now you're faced with the reality 2, 3, 4 years down the road where it is time to consider going public. And it is for the additional capital you're going to require. And you may now have to adjust your business plan and your financial statement and income statement to reflect you, the growth pattern that you're seeking, the additional income that you're going to require or funding you're going to require to expand your operation, particularly if you're producing something. That is always a major difficulty in most areas of business, is the cost of infrastructure. That's why we always look at companies that we invest in as to whether they're vertically integrated, you know, like the oil industry. There are companies like Exxon that produce the product from the ground, which is expensive oil. They ship that oil, expensive. They manufacture that oil in plants, expensive. Ship it again to then sell it to independents who provide you gasoline. And so these are different aspects, again, that you'll learn as you move through this process.
Can you hear me?
In defining the professional,
can you hear me?
That is not as difficult, because
you
already have a pretty good idea exactly where you're going to do, what you're going to do, and where you're going to go. And most often, professional corporations are established as in the legal industry because they've already merged with other law firms as LLCs and become a regional law firm. And very often they may want to decide to form a corporation nationally. So they become a national law firm and can be equally represented, because just as an example, a lawyer may be called to the bar in Montana, but can't practice law in Louisiana or New York unless he goes to the bar there. So you may have a great client who's a corporation in this law firm, but they may have products across the United States now. So they need to have lawyers in every state that can represent them if necessary. The other aspect of professional corporations that are so important too are, you know, liabilities and the type of liabilities that can fall upon them. And individual liabilities where you have action taken by an individual or another company are different than joint actions that are taken by a large number of people. And we've seen this happen in a number of cases, sometimes too late in cases where companies have ended up actually having assets but are bankrupt. And as a person that's owed money, you want to try and recover as much of the money that you're owed by this now bankrupt company. So these are all the aspects of decision-making you have to go through as you decide on what type of company that you want to have. And the thing is that when you're looking at a lot of this, you can go and, because of the glory of the internet, you can just go to Bing or Google and Google it, or you can Wikipedia it. Now, I know people will tell you that Wikipedia is not a fountain of great knowledge. Well, in fact, it is. There are certain things that aren't conspiratorial, that are just established law or established fact, such as what we're talking about. So you can learn from or go to Wikipedia, look up your state, and get all your information on the different types of corporate structures we've talked about today. You can also get information on Wikipedia about national structure. You can also go to different areas of the internet. You can go to the SEC. They have their own website. It's a very tremendous website. They have a huge inventory of information for you to read. You have to take the time, if you're going to look at that 2-3 years from now, or even now, if a great idea is good, you need to go read and learn from the SEC website and the United States Treasury, another great website. Your government has provided great websites for in each individual department under the executive branch of your government. So you might want very well to take advantage of those. By going to them and reading and learning. It's boring, it's tedious, but it prevents a lot of bad mistakes and bad choices, bad circumstances.
Yeah, apparently Shane can't hear me.
Good choices, good circumstances. So we want to make this even keel for you and make it easier as you're moving through the process. For these issues that you have to deal with are simplified, easier to understand, and make for good decisions. And so what else do we need to cover with regards to this? So state, no, county,
he can't hear me.
Also,
he can't hear me.
As,
or see me, I guess.
And city, because, of course, when you have major states like California and New York as examples, one of the reasons you're hearing people leaving them, yes, they're talking about taxes and everything else, but there's also regulations. So when you hear people talk about regulations, these are the type of regulations they're talking about, meaning that they, you don't just have specific regulations about how to run your business locally, but federally there's guidelines and regulations of how you have to run your business. So you have to be kept up with those regulations because they do interfere with your businesses. I will give you a perfect example. I like using it. And that is people working in a kitchen. 40 years ago, people would work in the kitchen. They wash their hands in the bathroom and come back in the kitchen and work. And then back in the 80s, a regulation was established by OSHA and in which if you leave the kitchen, you come back, you have to go to the kitchen sink. It's been specific.
Can anybody out there hear me?
For you to wash your hands before you continue to work, whether it's washing dishes or preparing food in any way. So every restaurant had to now have the cost of putting in piping and plumbing for a sink in the kitchen. So these are the types of small issues that will affect your balance sheet and your bottom line. And the other aspect of classification of your company has to do with also employees. If you're a sole proprietor,
you can see me. Can you hear me?
Working on developing something, that's a far different difference than having employees producing or manufacturing something that you have, packaging something you have, selling something you have, being a sales force that goes out and represents you. All these people have to be trained. All these people have to be taught their job. There have to be guidelines about what their job is. There have to be guidelines to protect them with regards to the jobs they do. So once again, all these fall under specific regulations of both federally and state and even county and city. And you have to follow all these guidelines about the provisions that you have to provide for your employees. And of course, the biggest one is that good old deal that you have now, particularly with all your government agencies, is you collect the taxes for them. Isn't that great? They don't have tax collectors in the modern age of the 20th and 21st century. That's the company that you work for, collects your taxes for the government, unless you have a sole proprietorship or you have a privately owned public or private limited corporation. The benefits there is that you, in fact, don't have to pay your weekly or biweekly or monthly taxes. You can wait till the end of the year. You do have to pay in.
Okay. I'm going to take him off for a minute and see if that helps. So now you can't hear me. You can't hear Shane. Now Shane's back.
On your business plan and the financial statement that you have to allow for is the employment of people and providing taxes and the taxes that you become liable for now as their employer. So a great many things start falling into place as you become an expanded company and why you've become a corporation. So I think Tom may be back now. We'll take a look here and see if we can.
I've been here the whole time you've been talking.
Well, that I'm not looking at a screen, Tom. I'm looking at information. So when you disappear, you should say something when you come back.
I did. I've been talking. I've sent you private chats.
I haven't heard a word from you until just now. Anyway, Tom is back. So please proceed with what you'd like to provide to everybody.
Yeah, I've been talking to you for half an hour.
No,
yes, I have.
That's okay. You're here now. You can take the last 10 minutes. Fire away, big guy.
Well, read the comments.
I don't do that when I'm doing the work.
I understand that, but that's you would have
informed the people watching us. So that
you would have known that I was here.
Oh well, rankle me after the show, okay, Tom?
I will.
You're wasting
time. I will for sure. Yeah, great information, though. I like that part. We were going to do subchapter S corporations as well. This is actually a C corp with an S corp declaration. So there are some limitations to this. You can only have 100 shareholders, and that's probably the biggest difference. But sometimes it's a corporation that's designed to avoid the double taxation of regular C corps, and we probably didn't talk about double taxation in the C corp part because corporate dollars are taxed twice. They're taxed once on the profit, and then they're taxed again when they're paid out in dividends or to the shareholders. So each dollar is taxed twice of the profit dollars. So just to clear that up for you. And the other thing, not all states tax S-corps equally. But most recognize them same way the federal government does and taxes shareholders accordingly. Some state taxes S-corps on profits above a specified limit, and other states don't recognize the S-corp election at all, simply treating the business as a C-corp. So you need to be careful in where you are and make sure that you register with the IRS to get the C corp or the S corp status, and that will take care of it. And the S corps have an independent life just like C corps. If a shareholder leaves the company or sells his or her share, the corporation can go along undisturbed, and that's the same with the S C corp as well. So in the S corp, you would have to do some things like in the C corp, like minutes. You got to keep minutes. You got to keep all of the things going. So you've got to have board members, secretary, treasurer, presidents, vice presidents, etc., whatever. So that's the S corp. A lot of people sometimes move from an LLC to an S corp if they want to raise money. As I say, you're limited to 100 stockholders, so that's where we are. So that's it. And let's see. Next, we've got the nonprofit corporation, and not much to know about this one. You'll be a 501c3. People don't make profit. The profit goes into the company. So that's pretty much it. The only thing you need to remember about a nonprofit is that if you disband the nonprofit for some reason, you have to designate the money to another nonprofit. You can't divide it up among the people who started the nonprofit corporation. So the money has to remain in a charitable 501c3 status as that goes along. So I think, let's see, do we have any questions that we didn't do? Let's see. I don't think so.
And you might want to mention about the NGO, the non-government organization, which is similar to a nonprofit corporation. Mm-hmm. And that is also used very often by philanthropists who have their own great wealth. They set up a non-government organization that they fund themselves independently and provide all the necessary costs involved, including what we're talking about. So that's a specific exception, but it is one that's exempt if you happen to know someone that's very wealthy, a billionaire or a multimillionaire, and mm-hmm. you have a charitable idea, then you can put together an NGO, non-government organization, and ask them to fund it, and they may very well like to, because they can write it off. It's an expense for them.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Market wrap up, Shane.
All right. Yeah, be happy to do that. Let me just get over here. Where are we? Well, my goodness gracious! Look at this. Commodities are popping along. The Brent in Europe, oil is $54.37, $50.79 in Mexico. Gasoline nationally is $1.47 a gallon. And heating oil is a 153. So it's moving up because, of course, the middle of the year and the cost of winter has been mild, actually. Gold's at 1911, down 712. Silver's down to 27.05, down 24 cents. And soybeans down 15 to 1353. Wheat's at 641, down 650. And as we like to do for people sometimes on Saturday, we cover all other commodities, but we're not going to today. Now, the U.S., 10 years at 1.09. So, my goodness gracious, it's moving up, which means people are selling it. So, it's up 4 cents today. That's because the U.S. currency is weakening still against the euro. It's at 123. The British sterling's 136. And the Canadian dollar's 126. Another basis point. Wow. We're moving to strength because of oil and other commodities around the world. So there you go. That's our principal market wrap up for the day.
All right. Well, that pretty well wraps up what we've got going on today. So, hey, don't forget, if you're watching us on YouTube, don't forget to subscribe and ring the little notification bell. You'll find that right below the podcast down on the screen there. And just click subscribe, and that'll bring up this little bell. And click on that, and you'll always be notified when we are going to be back on the air. So, and don't forget, of course, we are on tomorrow. We are on Saturday with our political show, and 8 to 11 Mountain Time. Click listen now at KMMSAM.com. And replays of this show and that show will be on. You can watch or listen to past shows at KMMSAM.com. Just click on Tom and Jane's podcast. And thanks for watching and listening, as always. Let's see, we got one more comment here we need to get in here. Got a couple more, it looks like. Let's see. Have a good day and sorry about the mess up. All right. Shane missed me on talkie-talkie drugs today. great show. Lots of information. Thank you, Linda, very much. Appreciate that very much. Thanks. Thanks for watching and thanks for being here. And say goodbye, Shane.
Indeed, be happy and be charitable to folks and live in the moment and live to work.
All right. Amen. All right. Don't forget, we're on tomorrow, 8 to 11 Mountain Time at KMMSAM.com.
Tomorrow, I believe, is Friday, Tom.
You're right. Tomorrow's Friday. We'll be on Saturday. Saturday, 8 to 11. I'm used to us being closing our week on Friday.
Tomorrow's Friday, the 8th.
And we're tomorrow is Friday.
9th, that's right.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, tomorrow the cable people are coming to see if they can do something with my internet. Because it does kind of come and go sometimes. So, all right. Thanks for watching, everyone. Hey, we'll see everybody on Saturday, 8 to 11. Thanks for watching and joining our family. Don't forget to subscribe and like and comment. And we'll see everybody on Saturday.